Thank you. Since this is the last talk of the conference, I just, you know, I mean, I was going to do it anyway, but I wanted to thank the organizers of QTCat, all like the tech staff, and like providing accommodation and travel. It was really, really helpful, and I really, really enjoyed the conference. Can we do like a quick round of applause? Wonderful. Let me preface this by saying that I didn't do this all on my own. This work is in collaboration with Nathaniel Arcor. And Max New. Oh. So just gonna box that up there. Okay, so I thought it would be good to start with just a recap of what representability is, and maybe give my own spin on how I like to think about it. By the way, can everyone see what I'm writing on the board? Good. And what better way to start than a little puzzle I came across in my undergrad. So let X be a topological space. And we're going to consider two real-valued continuous functions on X. So f and g. Now, take their pointwise product. So we define h to be f of x times g of x, and you want to show that h is continuous. So when I first came across this, it was in a topology course. I was like, okay, like let me take an open subset of R and show that the preimage under h is open. The difficulty, of course, is that it's not easy to relate the preimage under H to the preimages under F and G. It is possible we have to do some kind of fiddly set theoretic manipulations. My supervisor at the time, though, showed me an alternative solution, which I think is actually nicely categorical. So we start by representing this information diagrammatically. So here's our space X, and we have F here and G here. Then what we can actually do is package these two maps together into a single map, into the product. So I'll denote this as f, g, first component being f, second being g. And this is with the product topology. Now what's nice about this is that we can write h as a composite of this map with just ordinary multiplication from R cross R to R. We have a nice commutative diagram here. And so to show continuity of H, it suffices to show continuity of this multiplication map. But now we're working in metric spaces. You can use like sequential continuity, or epsilon delta, your favorite method. And so what I'm saying in general is that, if I just box this off, I think something fell. I'll just hold this. What I'm saying is that if you have an object in category Z and you have two morphisms, F from Z to A and G from Z to B, then if A and B have a product, you can package these together. You can also go the other way. If you have a single morphism, then by composing with the projections, you can get a pair of morphisms. So this is a bijective, indeed, natural correspondence. So the slogan you should keep in mind is that what products do is that they package morphisms. And in general, this is what it means to think of universal properties in the framework of representability. You know, rather than saying, okay, this product is this terminal object in the Cassio cones. You know, it's this platonic ideal of an object which has two maps to A and B. This is saying, no, like, okay, pragmatically, like concretely, what does the product do? What can I use it for? How does it interact with other objects? And how can I use it to solve concrete problems? So I kind of prefer this point of view as a physicist myself, who's kind of used to thinking more concretely and pragmatically than abstractly. So how does this work in general? You have, or rather you want, some universal objects W, and what do you want W to do? You want it to interact with other objects in a specified way. So we're going to specify that maps from Z to W are isomorphic to some P of Z. And you should think of this P as like a blueprint for your object. Okay, so we have a set for every object in our category. What else do we need? If we have a morphism, F from Z to Z prime, we get a pullback map this way by saying, okay, take blank, compose it with F. And so you should be able to transport this morphism to a morphism between these sets, a kind of pullback map based on F. And so really what P should be, for it to be a proper blueprint, is a free sheaf. So a functor from COP to sets. And then finding something which satisfies your blueprint, so finding some W, is the same as representing this free sheaf. And you can see, kind of by construction, this is a naturality square. So does someone have a question? Yes? Yes. C. Oh, C is just your ambient category. So in my previous example, C would have been top. So it says that the product topology lets you package continuous maps. Of course, you can work in, say, like smooth manifolds. So product manifolds lets you package smooth maps together, and so on and so on. Okay, so now my talk is about parameterized representability. So really, we should be thinking about families of universal properties, which, by the argument here, are families of free sheaves. So let me just write this down here. So okay, maybe we have some kind of parameter category A, and we have a functor from this into COP set. But really we can think of this as a bifunctor by uncurling. So a functor like COP cross A to set. Actually, we've kind of already met one such family. If I write the universal property of the product in terms of concepts, what's it saying? It's saying that morphisms from Z to A cross B should correspond to morphisms, or pairs of morphisms from Z to A and Z to B. And okay, so when we did it, we were fixing A and B and letting Z vary, but really this should be a trifunctor from C op cross C to set, sending Z, A, and B to this product of palm sets. Now, oh, did someone have a question? Oh. Yeah. Let me put this down then. I do not quite know how to do the logistics here. Cool, okay, here, families of free sheaves. So for this, we can use a little lemma from McLane. Actually, the first proposition McLane proves in categories of the working mathematician, which I like to call the multifunctor lemma. Just, that's what this is. And now I get to write McLean proposition 1, which is nice. So what does this give you? It gives you a way of defining functors out of a product category in a nice, really like maximally efficient fashion. So you want to define F from C cross D to E. Okay, so you have to define the actual objects. For morphisms, Okay, what does a multiple in the product category look like? You've got some pair of objects A and B, and another pair, A prime, B prime, and you have a pair of multiples, F, J. Now, I've drawn this picture with the morphism going diagonally to kind of evoke your geometric intuition. Really, we should be able to factorize this morphism into a horizontal part and a vertical part. So we can first just change A, and then just change B. Now, of course, like going horizontal then vertical, which is an arbitrary choice I made, so you could also go vertical then horizontal. So this goes via G first, and then via F. So the product category kind of has all of these nice commuting squares for free. And I'm suppressing the identity components here because it'll just make things tedious to write down. So what is this saying? If you want to define the action of a functor on morphisms, you only need to define it horizontally and vertically along these two orthogonal axes in the product category. And then the condition is that these actions have to commute, because the factorization, you can go in kind of any permutation of the directions. So what the multiple action is
that it suffices to define
two nets. I'll call this F horizontal from C across this. I'm using this bar notation for the discretization of a category, so just only identity morphisms. E, and a vertical part such that they agree on objects, and I apologize for being a little bit evil and using equality on objects, but that's what McLean does, and the actions commute. Now, as stated, this works for bifunctors. You can generalize this to multifunctors where you have maybe some like product categories. And to define a functor like this, you just make sure it's functorial in each factor separately, like a multilinear map. And then you have to check that the actions pairwise commute. Okay? So what if we go to our example here? In this case, the action in the Z variable is pre-composition on both sets. The action in the A variable is post-composition on the first set. And the action on the B variable is post-composition on the second set. Okay, so Z and A commute because of associativity, which just says that pre-composition, post-composition commute. Z and B commute, again, because of associativity. And A and B commute because they're on separate sets. So nice, we have a trifunctor from C up cross C to set. Okay, so now we're talking about universal properties here, right? Like ultimately at the end of the day, what we want to do is represent this by a product. So let's go into if C has products. So if C has products, what do we get? So I'm going to work with just the pre-sheaves now, which is why I'm leaving a little blank here. And we have a representation of this. But again, we have a kind of... Oh wait, do I have a question? Again, we have a kind of transport of structure phenomenon happening. So if we have a pair of maps F from A to A prime and G from B to B prime, then trifunctoriality guarantees that we have a map going this way in the pre-sheaf category, which I will denote for consistency as F composed blank times G composed blank. So if we have a write of this, then you have.
What a question?
Because when I see home is that A times B,
yeah.
my reaction, my instinct is to curvify, and I don't know how does that agree with what we're doing right now.
To mean currying?
Currying, yeah. Home. Oh. So the currying will be homed of A, B, C. I don't know.
Wait. Let me connect to the question. So this was another example I would have used of that. So the idea is you want home of A plus B to C to be isomorphic to home A home B C.
Yeah. Ah, okay, this is like other direction. Okay. Okay.
But again, like, this is another kind of family of tree sheets, right? So this equation defines the universal property of the exponential object.
Okay.
It's like object on BC. What does it do? Well, when you probe it by A, you have maps A plus B to C.
Okay.
But this itself should be really viewed as a triangle. So C op cross C op cross C to set.
Okay.
You know, it's like A, B, and C. A is contravariant, B is contravariant, C is.
Yeah.
So the result I'm talking about will also apply for, say, families of exponential objects.
Okay, cool.
Products are like a simple example.
Thank you.
No worries. Right, so we have this kind of T representations, so we get an induced map this way, between these species. I'm going to call this map Y of F times J. And here, Y is the unit in there. Now, why have I written it like this? Well, we know that the unit embedding is fully faithful. So Y is fully faithful. And so any morphism between tree sheaves comes from a unique morphism between the objects.
Y is
the unit embedding. So this implies we get a kind of pullback perfunctoriality. And so you can well define a product by functor C plus C to C.
Okay, so we've gone through this extended example for products. Now let's do the general case. So I'll just erase this. I think I would be doing a disservice if I erased the names of my co-authors, so I won't do that. Okay, so the general statement of parameterized representability is as follows. So we have a family of universal properties, which can view as a family of presheaves. So I'm going to view that as a bifunctor, Q from C op cross A to sets. And these presheaves are going to be pointwise representable. Objects from A to C. Oh, did you have a question? 5 minutes. Oh, okay, sure. That's fine. And a family of isomorphisms, Q of C A. So we've chosen a representing object for each presheaf. So if we take this, and we mix in transport of functoriality, and we mix in pullback of functoriality, then you to C, extending F. In particular for free. So the functorial action is determined automatically. You don't have to manually check it. So let me close out with some applications. First, a remark. See, this map here already has some functoriality we can exploit, because we can act by maps in the C variable. So this really is a functor from C op cross mod A to set. And so we don't actually need this functoriality in C for Q. So the remark is that it suffices to have Q as a map from mod C op cross A to set. Then what you do is that you transport the functoriality in C from here to here. And then you also have to check that these actions commute, and this turns out to be a funny octagon condition. So this gives you a kind of maximally lazy way to define Q and define your functor. All right, so some applications. So there are these various parameter theorems in the literature when you have, say, like a family of limits or a family of ends or a family of adjunctions, and you want to show that this kind of extends naturally to a functor, you prove a parameter theorem. So this unifies various parameter theorems. For limits, ends, etc. Another nice thing, so if you use this remark, then there's a particular example of a Q you can take. So you can take Q to be hom of mod GC A for a map on objects from C to A the other way. If you do this, and this recovers a result of Street called the core of adjoint functors. It's a 2012 paper. So it recovers adjunction core. And then one last thing, since I'm running out of time, Nathaniel has figured out a way to generalize this to the formal category theory context. So it has a version for formal category theory. And so in particular, you get versions for enriched categories and internal categories. Which is nice, because as you get to these more sophisticated kinds of categories, it becomes more and more tedious to verify functoriality. So it's nice to have these kinds of functoriality for free type results, which save you some effort. And yeah, I think I will end there based on time.
I just have a question about the notation here.
Yes.
QCA equals hom CFA.
Yeah.
So C is an object from the category C.
Yep.
A is an object of the category A.
Yep.
And what? Oh, it's the functor. The functor applied to A. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Well. Okay. So just to be clear. This mod F is only defined on objects. We don't have like an action on arrows yet.
Okay.
Like, the idea is that like Q is functorial in A, and so we can transport that functoriality over to this.
Okay.
And then pull it back to F to get this function from A to C.
Okay, so basically we define it only on objects like we do with normal maps, and then we extend the functoriality through this.
Yeah, you get functoriality for free.
Okay, sure, cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Just, I feel like you define appreciative just as a func- as a contravariant functor.
Yep.
Is that just it?
Yeah. So okay. So that's like idea of the concept of concept with an attitude.
Okay.
So like, is the idea like okay, like you call it a pre-sheaf because it's on its way to becoming a sheaf or something. So like usually like you define sheaves as like pre-sheaves of certain properties like glowing axioms and stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, it has the unfortunate side effect of okay, now like functors from C to set are called co-pre-sheaves, which is a bit of a mouthful.
No, functors are co-pre-sheaves.
Well, these functors are called co-pre-sheaves.
Okay, okay, okay.
I guess you could call them post-sheaves, but that's not quite accurate.
Okay. And these pre-sheaves are sheafifiable, right?
Well, if you give a Grothendieck topology on C, then they're sheafifiable. Essentially, you need to give a notion of like what does it mean to glue things together.
Yeah, okay.
In your category.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, then if there are no more questions, let's thank Ruby again.
Thank you.